Blog Talk Radio.
We have been trained to hate ourselves and love white people.
We still are exploited as a people. We're constantly fighting for resources.
We've never been citizens except on paper.
The participants of this are normally victims of this neocolonialist system.
You're listening to the voices of New Africa. Free the land.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
Welcome to the Voices of New Africa. This is Kokai. I'm sitting in the place of our illustrious host, Brother Yera, a.k.a. Prophecy. And we're here today talking about the topic again, voting. We're in the actual election period of these United States of America, and we found that there are two candidates that are on the ballots that are prominent in the media today, and that's the two Europeans. I think one of them's name is Donald Trump and the other one is Hillary Clinton. And so a lot of times when we see elections, we realize that we're in a process to put people in place of this government to represent us. But there is a unique reason why it's an election. The term election means that you have been given your choices and you have to decide on which one of the choices given to you that you would side for. It's not an actual choice. It's not an actual selection of the person in office, but it is an election, meaning that other powers to be have decided who you should actually vote for, and they've narrowed it down to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, both that were neighbors in New York City, and now they're supposedly going against each other for this presidency award. But we want to talk about voting. You know, as a new African, we must begin to recognize what voting really stands for. A lot of times we listen to some of our historians and they tell us what actually went on in our history. You know, some people, a lot of the people believe that, you know, we should vote because, you know, our ancestors died and fought for a right to vote. But is that true? Are we really understanding the actions of our ancestors when we say that they died and they fought for us to have a right to vote? And are we disrespecting our ancestors if we don't vote? These are some of the questions we must ask ourselves today as new Africans, black people, because we have to get to the root cause of our conditions in every aspect of social activity. And when we talk about voting, we don't necessarily understand the reasons why our ancestors fought and died in the past. It wasn't for a right to vote. It wasn't for a right to sit on the same toilet stools as Europeans. It wasn't the right to be able to enter into the front of the building and sit on the front of the bus and drink out the same water fountains. It wasn't for those reasons. We were fighting for our freedom. We were fighting to have an opportunity to do for ourselves in an independent nation. And when we began to look at the history of the Voting Rights Act and how every 25 years, they have to go back and extend the voting rights. The last time they extended the voting rights was in 2006. So we have until 2030 when they either decide that we can't vote or they decide to extend the Voting Rights Act again. The first time they extended the Voting Rights Act was in 1984. And then just recently in 2006, they had to extend it another 25 years. And so this is something that we don't recognize as a people. So does voting really work? And we have some of the brightest, articulate, educated representatives of the new African community. And I want to begin by allowing some of our guests to participate. So, caller on 237, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Free the land. And who am I speaking with?
This is Cheryl.
So, what do you think about voting? Does it work? Did our ancestors die for us to have a right to vote? Or is that some misnomer? Or is that the only thing that they really died for?
Well, I'm not political astute, but I will say this. Unless the truth was out there, what were they fighting for? What were they voting for? Did they know about their status? In my opinion, it did not work. Citizens do not need a voting rights act. Citizens have people are born with unalienable rights. So if this is all about voting, repeal the Voting Rights Act and let them go in freely and vote as they want to.
Okay, sister. All right. Thank you very much. I'd like to give the audience some historical background behind voting. And we must recognize that there was a time when we had a Civil Rights Act that has been lost in the history books, but the first Civil Rights Act, and people aren't many of us aren't aware of the first Civil Rights Act, but the first Civil Rights Act was actually the Civil Rights Movement, if you will, not Civil Rights Act, the Civil Rights Movement. The first Civil Rights Movement was in 1865. And we fast forwarded 100 years to 1965, and that is actually the second Civil Rights Movement, where all of us know about Martin Luther King and the marching and all of that. But it just shares with you how history repeats itself, how we had an opportunity to show our future leaders, our children, what direction to go in. And if we chose in 1865 to go down the direction of civil rights and integrating with these people and becoming more like them and asking them to give us some sort of equality, then why did we have to go 100 years later and go back to knocking on their doors, asking them for equality, asking them to just let us be with you and can we all just get along 100 years later? We have to understand our history and we have to recognize what has gone on in the past so we will stop repeating our mistakes. Our ancestors died for us to have an opportunity to see which direction to go in. They didn't die to get us a right to vote. They died for us to see that voting doesn't work. It didn't work in 1865. 100 years later, it still didn't work. And so we have to look at our history. What happened in 1865 that shares with us that direction didn't work? Well, they implemented the 13th Amendment. They decided that we could vote. Then all of a sudden, they created other obstacles. They began to implement the Black Code. They began to start developing requirements that wouldn't allow us to vote. One of the reasons we couldn't vote after we had the 13th Amendment was that you had to be literate, where most of us couldn't read. Matter of fact, it was against the law for them to teach us how to read. So it eliminated masses of our people so that we couldn't vote. Then you had to have property. So now that eliminated all of us. Fast forward to 1965, and supposedly we were able to be citizens so we could vote inhibited at the polls. Then they created poll taxes. That's not including the fact that vicious Europeans would stand outside of the poll booths, threaten our elderly, threaten our men and women who tried to vote, to tell them and call them all kinds of names and tell them, "We're going to kill your family." Matter of fact, some people who voted had their houses burned down. Some people had crosses burned in their yard saying that they better not go down to the polls and vote. And because a lot of us wanted to go and vote, because we were told that you shouldn't fight for your liberation and your freedom. You should just go and try to change it by asking us to allow you to be in a position to change the statutes, to change the laws. And so we were misguided to believing that this was the direction to go. But when we decided to stand back, and create and develop our own communities, to begin to develop our own institutions, such as educational institutions, such as hospitals, such as our own businesses, we began to be a thriving nation. Between that 100 years of 1865 to 1965, we had over 40 successful independent cities, jurisdictions that were completely Black. Because remember, between the 1865s and 1965, we actually couldn't mingle with these folks. They didn't want us drinking out their water fountains. They didn't want us shopping at their stores. They didn't want us to even walk down the same side of the street. They just didn't want to be around us, so that forced us to find an equitable, a good solution for our people. And so what we did was we started setting up our own communities, started developing our own institutions. We have one city that's right down in Mississippi, from Mississippi, called Mount Bayou. One of the most successful cities, because they had their own hospital, they had their own economy, and they had their own professionals providing services for the community. And now we see that Mount Bayou has been stripped of everything, just like Tulsa, Oklahoma, just like Rosewood, just like many other cities that had to be developed by us because we weren't allowed to be a part of this system. And so we must recognize that there is a reason why our forefathers died for us. And it's not disrespectful for someone to recognize that voting doesn't work and decide not to vote. What it is, it's more respectful because you're acknowledging and appreciating what our ancestors did to show us the way. The way to go, the correct road to take. Not continue going down the wrong road after our ancestors have shown us through fighting, through dying, through getting the right to vote, that didn't work. And it hasn't worked. And now we find ourselves in 2016 trying to decide on who to vote for, the wicked or the evil. Both are going to do us no justice at all. But we have to be content with selecting one of them. No, we have to begin to develop a mindset that we have to be in control, in total autonomy of our situation, of our conditions. And the only way to do that is for us to start really understanding what freedom and independence is all about. The only way that solutions can come about for our people is that the people that are directly immersed in the problem, in the situation, have to develop the solution. It has to come from within us. And in order for it to come from within us, we have to have our own independent sovereign nation. So unimpeded by anyone else, we'll come up with the solution. We come up with the solutions to everything else. Impoverished people, we're still resilient, we're still here because we come up with solutions. Sometimes it is by any means necessary, but we come up with solutions. We come up with solutions when we're left to our own devices and we're amongst each other. We develop solutions, and that's where we have to begin to recognize our solutions lie, is within our community. And in order for us to make those ideas come to fruition, then we have to begin to start thinking about our own nation, our own independent sovereign nation. We have a nation. We have ancestors that have told us the way, have drawn out the framework, have put together an economic plan on how to develop our own independent nation. And if you've never heard of the Republic of New Africa, a lot of our historical, our ancestors, our historians, the most brilliant historians of all time, got together in March the 31st, 1968 in Detroit, Michigan. I mean, we're talking about John Henry Clark. We're talking about Queen Mother Moore. We're talking about Betty Shabazz. We're talking about a lot. 500 of our ancestors got together and said, you know what, putting things in historical context, we can only come to one conclusion as a people, and that is integration and being a part of this corrupt capitalist system does not work for us, and that we need to have our own nation and be a representation of how a civilization should be run, and put us in our rightful place as leaders of humanity. And so we decided that as a people, we have been detached from Africa for a while. So in order to develop a nation here, we'll call it the Republic of New Africa. We're new Africans now. And we'll be able, with the technology and the resources here in the United States, to develop our own country, our own nation, with five states: South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. And a lot of that information is not being shared with the people. We don't have an opportunity. And I'm going on and on. I'm going to take a break right now before I get to the next caller. So just bear with me for a second as we go to a break for a second.
Human rights is, that's a good question.
Human rights. Well, that's a tough one.
Wow.
Celestial Yucca.
I don't even know how to give that a definition.
I would probably have to do a little bit of homework or something.
Any right that I think any, just as a normal, you know, human, any...
The rights that humans have.
Oh, that's a very large debate.
Me será que es un mancito.
Tú le puedes preguntar a 20 personas y te van a dar 20 diferentes opiniones.
Non saprei, una domanda complicatissima.
Yeah, we just take them for granted that they're there, but we don't even consider what they are.
Human rights are the rights you have simply because you're human. It's how you instinctively expect and deserve to be treated as a person, like the right to live freely, to speak your mind, and to be treated as an equal. There are many kinds of rights. Most apply to a certain group. But human rights are the only ones that apply to absolutely everyone, everywhere. That means kids, old people, poor people, basketball players, garbage men, rappers, teachers, Africans, Indians, Albanians, Christians, Muslims, Kabbalists, atheists, your mom, your dad, your next door neighbor, and you all have the exact same human rights. In other words, they're universal. But the question remains, what are they?
Name human, the human rights?
What the human rights are?
The right to live.
Equality between all people.
Right to religion, the right to...
Is there supposed to be a list somewhere I should be aware of?
According to the United Nations, there are a total of 30 human rights, which are usually lumped together and called simply human rights. They're all listed out in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the world's most widely accepted document on the subject. So, in summary, at first, only a few lucky people had any rights, until one of those guys decided, hey, other people should have some rights too, which was great, except not everyone agreed. And it only took a few thousand years of fighting and declarations and more fighting until everyone finally agreed that human rights should apply to everyone. And they all lived happily ever after. Except for one little problem. If people have the right to food and shelter, why are 16,000 children dying of starvation every day? One every 5 seconds. If people have freedom of speech, why are thousands in prison for speaking their minds? If people have the right to education, why are over a billion adults unable to read? If slavery has truly been abolished, why are 27 million people still enslaved today? More than twice as many as in 1800. The fact is, when it was signed, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights did not have the force of law. It was optional. And despite many more documents, conventions, treaties, and laws, still a little more than words on a page. So the question is, who will make those words a reality?
Okay, so we're back. And we're talking about voters' rights, the Voting Rights Act. Wow. Is voting an option for us? And I'd like to hear from one of the callers, because as you saw in the excerpt, they never once mentioned anything about voting as a right. We know through our history here that it must be a privilege, because they had to actually extend the Voting Rights Act every 25 years. It's presented back to Congress. The first time they extended it was in 1984. The second time they extended it was recently in 2006. Most of us have not even heard of this. Matter of fact, some of our so-called New African or Black intellectuals would even say that this is not true. But it's documented in congressional meetings. So in 2006 was the last time, and that means in 25 years, which is 2031, they could either tell us we can't vote again, or they'll extend it another 25 years. But are we, in essence, privileged or have an opportunity to make a change in this system by voting? Should we vote? Are we disrespecting our ancestors? And I'd like for one of our callers to come in and just give us your comments on this. Caller, you're on the line.
Hey, good morning, Kokai.
Good
morning. 644.
How you doing, sir?
Wireless Red,
doing,
fantastic.
Sir?
Blacktastic, man. Fired up and ready to go.
Thank you, sir. So what do you think about voting? Is this something we should do, or is this something that is of no avail to us? What's your opinion on that, sir?
Well, here's my position on that. And that we, as a people, all options should be on the table. Just like cameras, some people say voting doesn't work, or they say cameras won't work. And I'm comparing here now, and I see in the papers where strides have been and are being made because people have continued to, or our people rather, to fight back and push back. Everybody can do something. Everybody can't do everything. And so my specialty, Kokai, is that all options should be on the table. And I agree with you when you talk about how the political process is competitive and how it changes and flips-flops. But that is, it's my job to counteract all of that stuff and keep pushing in the manner and direction that I'm pushing in. So that's my specialty. And, of course, you know, my specialty is these youth leadership conferences, also pushing back on the killing of our people. That's my specialty. Of course, I support other issues and other initiatives, and I work on other aspects when and where I can. But we must stand up and stop our people from being murdered by killer cops. But to answer your question more specifically and directly, for me, voting is an option. Like, all options should be on the table. It is not the end of the game in and of itself, but it's one of them. It's one of the, entities, aspects. But that's my answer to your question.
All right. Look, thank you very much, Brother Red, and I'm glad you could call. I want to also say that we're running out of time, so I would like to also make a point that in 1864, when we had, in the 1800s, when we had the 13th Amendment, it was actually It was also guaranteed by the 15th Amendment, you know, the right to vote. We began to start participating in the actual voting process, and the first obstacle that they implemented was that you had to be literate, and then you had to own property. Later on, when we get to the Second Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s, we realized that we hadn't really been able to vote effectively, and so we began to push the drive to vote to change some things within the system, and then they implemented poll taxes. They implemented brutality, death threats, the burning of our houses to keep us from voting. And now it's more clandestine. What they do is they police our neighborhoods and imprison our potential voters and have them in jail as criminals. Now they're implementing IDs to be able to vote. So it's a continuous process on how we have been really neutralized as a voting population. And it will continue to go on. And we have to recognize at some point when we need to change routes and begin to effectively strategize to do something different. And a lot of times it has to be outside of the box, because when things are outside of the box, yeah, it seems ludicrous or crazy at first, but that's just like Thomas Edison. People were walking around in the dark, and it was normal. And they thought he was crazy to create a light bulb. But now, after the light bulb has been created, it's no longer crazy. It was a great it was a great idea. Now people who walk around in the dark appear to be crazy, because you have something else. You have another alternative. And that's what we're talking about with the Republic of New Africa. We need to have our own independent sovereign nation so we can creatively, as we always do, come up with an alternative that's separate from voting, that has nothing to do with this system that it was designed to exploit and oppress us. And then we will see how crazy it is today that we were continuously voting to ask these people to change their attitudes towards us, to change how they treat us, to give us equality, and find out later on that the choice of having our own independent nation was the right decision is only something that a person with vision would be able to see. And we want all of our people to stop dreaming and wake up and have a vision, because there is a difference between dreaming and vision. Vision is what you see and you bring to fruition. Dreaming is something you do while you're asleep. And if you never wake up, you'll continue to dream. So I want to end that with that statement today and let all of our brothers and sisters, all of the New Africans, know that you are automatically a citizen of the Republic of New Africa. When you begin to do the things that are necessary to get our nation, its own independent, sovereign nation and land, then you become conscious citizen of the Republic of New Africa. So look up the Republic of New Africa, learn more about our history, and find out the real reason why we need to have total autonomy to actually effectively make a change and make a difference in our families, in our communities, in our nation, and in our race. And with that being said, thank you for coming, listening to the Voices of New Africa, and we'll see you this time next week at the same time, 10 o'clock, and you'll have our illustrious host back, Yera. And so until then, free the land.
We have been trained to hate ourselves and love white people.
We still are exploited as a people. We're constantly fighting for resources.
We've never been citizens, except on paper.
The participants of this are normally victims of this neo-colonialist system.
You're listening to the Voices of New Africa. Free the land.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.